And welcome to another edition of Book Talk. I'm Linda Lloyd, and it's my pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Highschool, the author of the Southern Living Party Cookbook, A Modern Guide to Gathering, and it's published by Oxmoor House. Elizabeth was with us last year to talk about her What Can I Bring cookbook. It has quickly become a favorite at our house for go-to recipes for any occasion. Now she joins us with this updated version of the 1972 Southern Living Party Cookbook, A Modern Guide to Gathering. Based on the recipes we've tried so far, I know we'll be going to this one often too. Well, first I have to tell you, my husband said to tell you thank you for the last cookbook. Since the last one came out, we have used it more often, I think, than any other. Anytime that somebody asks us for something, it's the go-to.
Oh, my Lord, we've that made makes so many my things. Day.
So this new one, the Southern Living one, mm-hmm. I don't have the original 1972
okay.
one.
Okay.
So I was so excited to get this one because I know there's tons of other recipes.
There are. So we did keep a lot of the original recipes. Probably a fourth of the recipes are from the first book. And that was one of the things that I found so interesting was that those recipes have stood the test of time. I mean, I didn't think that we would, when I first was presented with the project, I really didn't think that there would be anything that we would be able to pull out or that we would want to. Until I started going through it and realized that half of those recipes I use in my repertoire all the time. I mean, like the curry mayonnaise we use for crudité for my catering company, I've probably made 8,000 gallons of that curry mayonnaise, you know? So there were tons of things. And then a lot of recipes that I had remembered, you know, my mother or my grandmother making that we hadn't done in a while. And I felt like it was time to sort of bring those back out of the closet. So, yeah, even if you don't have the original book, I still think that you're going to really fall in love with this book.
How did you get chosen to do it?
I still don't know what in the hell they were thinking. I'm just teasing. You know, I don't know. I think after the success of What Can I Bring, you know, which was wildly popular, came about, and I think that's sort of what maybe started turning the tide my way. Sid Evans was the one that ultimately made the decision. I've had a catering company for years. My grandmother, my great-grandmother, my mother, my father, I mean, they all entertain. I mean, I grew up, you know, in a party family. And I think he also understood that, you know, I believe in traditions and I love being able to take things that are wonderful and keeping those, but then also, you know, in my everyday cooking, also adding some new and fresh things. I do believe that there is a lot of etiquette that's very, very important that I think that's overlooked in entertaining and in being a gracious guest and being a gracious host. And I think in What Can I Bring, a lot of that came out. You know, I mean, one of the things that I say all the time is, you know, if you don't bring something when you're invited somewhere, then, you know, I mean, unfortunately, it doesn't sound like your mama raised you right. I mean, you need to bring something and you need to be a good guest and you need to be a lovely hostess. And all of that sort of came to the surface when we were promoting What Can I Bring? And I think that's probably what turned it my way. But I am sure super grateful, whatever it was.
Well, I really appreciated the hosting handbook section mm-hmm. because it does give you lots of tips and things that you don't think about.
I have been catering, setting tables for 20 years now. I mean, it's really the only thing that I've ever done is cater. And I still go to Emily Post to look up things. I mean, and sometimes it's just a basic table setting. Because sometimes you kind of forget or you question yourself, you know. There are days that I'm, you know, that I think, wait, is the napkin on this side or that side? You know what I mean? Honestly. And so it's nice to have that beautiful diagram that shows everything that anybody could possibly ever throw at you that needs to be put on a table. Knife, fork, soup spoon, dessert fork, teaspoon, you know, water glass, wine glass, champagne glass, white wine glass. Where do all of these things go if you were going to set a full formal table? I mean, there are things in there as far as just how to write a thank you note. You know, I think that's one of the most important things that we can do. And right now, as I say that, I'm behind on my thank you notes. And so please forgive me if anybody's listening to this right now thinking, my Lord, well, she sure hadn't written a thank you note for the casserole that I dropped out of at our house. I promise Sandy that thank you note is coming. But it is. And even if it's late, it's still valid. So I don't care if you're a month late, you write that thank you note when you think about it.
And is it important for it to be handwritten?
It is. I just really feel like there is nothing better than receiving an envelope in the mail that expresses your gratitude. And it doesn't have to be that long. You don't need to worry about, you know, front, back, every sentence, you know, just even if you're in a hurry, even if it's just four or five lines that just says thank you and I'm grateful. You know, it's easy to send out an email or a quick text. And I'm not saying that that's not important, you know, that it certainly doesn't convey the message. But when someone has really gone out of their way to make you feel special, and that's what they've done if they've invited you to a party, then it's important for you to let them know that you appreciate it.
Well, another tip that you gave was the feng shui of the buffet. And I had never thought about that before. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense, but it's not something that I'd ever thought about before. Can you explain a little bit about what you mean when you say that?
So whenever you're setting a buffet, you have to think about, and we do buffets mainly with my catering company. We do a lot of seated plated, but we also do a lot of buffets. And you want to remember that, you know, people are trying to balance a drink. They've got a plate in their hand. You know, how do you arrange it? You don't want to put the rolls first because that wouldn't be the first thing that you eat. You always do the protein first and then the vegetables, then the salad, then any bread or any of that that you have that sort of goes through. We always do the napkins, whether they're going to be rolled, you know, rolled silverware or whether we have a napkin and then a fork separate at the end of the buffet. So that's the last thing that you pick up so that you don't have to worry about balancing the rolled napkin with the plate while you're trying to serve yourself. It's a lot. And there are a lot of little tips in there, you know, that kind of help your guest maneuver and get through that buffet line a little bit better. And also just some wonderful tips on how to be a better hostess and things to think of that will make it so much easier.
Was the estimating quantity section something from the original edition?
It was.
Because that was so helpful.
It was. It absolutely was. And we added to it a little bit because I think people are eating more and their portions are a little bit larger. If you go to McDonald's, you'll definitely see that as compared to what was being served in the 70s. So we did add a little bit to that, the alcohol, how to set up a bar. You know, if you're having 100 people, you know, not everybody knows how many fifths of vodka you're going to need. And that's also funny because in the Delta, we double it. So whatever the normal amount is in the Delta, we have to double it. We tend to drink a little bit more in the Delta than we do anywhere else. Anyway, so that is one thing to think about. But yeah, there are a lot of formulas in there that will help you with doubling and tripling recipes, you know, just to kind of work that all out.
Well, you said that we drink more in the Delta than anywhere else, but you also include a story about an Irish wedding that you catered where even estimating the right quantities didn't quite work out the way you planned.
Lord, and that was such a great wedding. That was actually for one of the very prominent judges in Memphis, and it was her daughter that was getting married, this adorable boy from Ireland. And they warned us. I mean, they told us, you know, this is going to be, you know, you're going to need a tremendous amount. You know, you're going to need copious amounts of Irish whiskey. Well, I thought we had it covered. I couldn't imagine. We had tripled the normal amount that we would have done. Honey, we got through about 45 minutes in that reception and we were flat out. I mean, we were headed to the Buster's to go pick up more Irish whiskey. Sometimes you get waylaid. Sometimes your formulas don't even work. But the good news is there's always a liquor store close by.
Well, and it also reminds you to be mindful of your guests. You know, if they give you suggestions, you may want to go with them.
Exactly. You're absolutely right.
Well, I also love the story of how you were welcomed to Oxford, mm-hmm. because that was such an unusual thing to do.
You know, I think that unless you've moved a lot, I don't think you understand how difficult it can really be. And I was completely grounded, 100% happy as a lark living in the Mississippi Delta. I had never even dreamed that I would leave. You know, I could not have loved it anymore. I still have. It's not like the Delta's no longer there just because I'm not in it. But, I mean, I had the most wonderful friends. I was working at Viking Range Corporation, and life was fabulous. My husband had just built me the home of my dreams. I mean, I had two dishwashers. Honey, I had arrived. I had an ice maker. I mean, I didn't need anything else in the world. I was going to live and die in that house. When I died, they were going to lay me out on my dining room table in my beautiful dining room. They were going to open up my silver closet, which was my most prized thing in the entire world. And that was going to be it. Everybody was going to get to come and see me and see my silver, and it was just going to be fantastic. Anyway, so we ended up, of course, moving to Oxford and starting our farm there, Woodson Ridge Farms. it was a bit of a shock leaving, and I didn't realize how affected I would be by it. And I was lonely and I was sad, and I'm one of those people that likes to go to the Kroger and see five people, you know, that I know. And I like familiarity. I like for everything to be familiar. And so when we moved to Oxford, I mean, you would have thought that I had moved to Mexico. I mean, I cried and I cried and I cried. Oh. Luke kept saying, Elizabeth, we are in the same area code. I mean, it is not like you. We're an hour from home, you know. Anyway, and so Vontae's Russell, who now is Vontae's Farmer, she was one of my lifelong friends. We grew up together in Rosedale. So she had already moved and was living in Oxford. And so she had this beautiful party for me, and it was a luncheon. And she invited all of her best friends to come and to meet me. And then she was just so precious. So she did these wonderful little cookies with my initials on them and put them in glassine, you know, little bags. And then had a card with my name, my address, my email, my telephone number. Really just like a calling card that she had made for you that all the guests got to take home with them. So that if they wanted to get in touch with me or if they wanted to text me, they could. And it was just a beautiful introduction to everyone in Oxford. And it was one of the sweetest, most considerate things to do. You know, it doesn't have to be a big deal. You know, just a come and go coffee is enough to help introduce someone that might be lonely and maybe that's just sort of moved into a new place. So that really was one of the best parties. And Vontae's is just such a special, special friend.
It helped you kick off your catering business too.
And because she was so funny because Vontae's is just adorable. And she is a great cook, but, you know, doesn't cook on big scales like that. And plus, she wanted to help me get my business known. And she said, I mean, Elizabeth, I can't hire another caterer. I mean, you are a caterer, so you're going to have to cook this. And so I did cook it, and that really did. I mean, it was one of the things that really set the business on fire.
But I can certainly understand. I've moved several times. And like you, the first time that I did, I was traumatized. So just having that little extra, going that little extra mile. But that's true of any party. And you've got some party rules sprinkled throughout. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with those?
I think it's just things that I've figured out or that I have realized over the years from having my own parties. And it's funny because I kind of have to separate my catering company from my own parties, because with catering, I'm incredibly confident. You know, it's one thing to go into someone else's home and to put on a party. You know, I'm not vulnerable. It's not my house. You know, if there are dust bunnies under the couch, not my dust bunnies, you know. I mean, I know the food's going to be good, so we bring that and we do all that. And, you know, if their guest towels aren't arranged or, you know, all of these things, if they don't have the right soap in the bathrooms, it's not my, you know, it's not my deal. It's not my house. But when I'm having people to my home, it's a whole nother ballgame. And you can get incredibly tripped up and scared to death and overwhelmed if you don't follow these rules. And I'm not going to lie. Every single Christmas when I throw my huge, big, wonderful, fun Christmas party, I lose my mind the day before. I mean, every single time. Anyway, it's kind of one of those things, do as I say, not as I do. But yeah, I mean, you know, you want to do as much as you possibly can ahead of time. That, to me, is one of the most important things that you can do. Because if you do that, then so much of the stress is alleviated on the day of the party. You know, go ahead and find recipes that you can make ahead. And so many of the recipes in this Southern Living Parties cookbook can be made ahead, can be frozen, and that's what you want to do. The last thing you want to be doing is standing in the kitchen slaving over a hot stove as guests are walking in. You need to enjoy the party as much as they do. And if you're not enjoying it, let me tell you something, ain't nobody else going to enjoy it.
Because you're so stressed.
You set the tone, absolutely. If you're running around with a chicken with your head cut off and your guests are walking in the door, they're going to be terrified. They're not going to have fun, you know? I mean, they're going to be just as stressed as you are, and that's not what you want, you know? Don't clean anything from the waist down. You're wasting your time. When you are in a house and everybody is there together, it's all eye level. You know, I mean, everything is from the waist up. People aren't looking down at the ground. They're not looking at your baseboards. If you've spent 2 days cleaning your baseboards, you wasted your time. You need to be eye level, and that's really going to save you some trouble, I guess, is all I'm saying.
Do you think that most people at a party are looking for things to criticize, or they're just there to have a good time?
Exactly. Put yourself in the guest position. When you go to someone's home, are you really trying to get in their bathroom so that you can go in their medicine cabinet and see if it's organized? No, you're not. And there are times that I get invited to a party, and honey, I'm just so grateful to be invited. I don't care if they're serving hot dogs on a paper towel. As long as I didn't have to make that hot dog, I'm so grateful to be there. I'm doing a jig on the way into the house. They're not there to judge you. They're there because they're grateful and they've been invited and they've been included. And that's all anybody wants, is to be included. I mean, honestly, bottom line, that's all anybody wants, is just to be included. And when you are, they are grateful and they're not there to judge you. These are your friends. You're not inviting your worst enemy over. You know,
exactly.
You're just not. And if they are judging you, then they're not your friend anyway. And don't worry about them.
Now, you also included a champagne primer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite?
Champagne?
Mm-hmm.
With champagne, I do a lot of Prosecco, honestly, with our catering and with my parties at home, because my friends can suck champagne down like water. I mean, honey, they can go through a case quicker than you can say Jiminy Cricket. So I'm going to go with something a little bit more affordable, which usually a Prosecco is. I do love Sofia Coppola's champagne that she does. It's adorable. It's in a great pink glassine bag, and I'll tie that with a beautiful silk ribbon if I'm going to someone's house and I'm taking it. It's a great look. It is a little bit sweeter, which I kind of like. And so that would be my go-to if I'm taking it somewhere or if I'm not planning on, you know, having to do copious amounts of it. If I'm doing copious amounts, then I'm going to go ahead and go with La Marca, which is a Prosecco. I love the label. It's a beautiful label. It looks like it's more expensive than it is. And it tastes great. And, you know, people love it across the board.
Is that another thing that you shouldn't worry about, is how much you spend on wine, on whatever you're serving? Do people really notice if it's a $40 bottle of champagne versus a $7.99 bottle of champagne?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't going to be some wine snobs that come to your house that might really notice, but I certainly think that they understand that if you're having 60 people over for a cocktail party, I mean, of course you're not going to do a $40 bottle of wine. Now, if you're only having 10 people for a seated dinner, you know, and it's New Year's Eve, yeah, you may want to get the Veuve. You may want to go ahead and do something a little bit nicer. You know, you certainly don't want to be that person that, you know, serves the cheap wine to his guest and then has the expensive wine behind the bar that they're drinking. To me, that is one of the most insulting things that you can possibly ever do. And I have been to parties where they did that, you know, where they put out the cheap wine and the cheap champagne, and then there was a private little bar back somewhere that had all the really good wine, and, you know, maybe two or three people were selected to partake of that. I can tell you one thing, I never went back to that party, because you want every guest to feel like they are the most special person in the world. And so you do the best you can. And if it is a $5 bottle of Riuniti, if that's the best you can do, buddy, you serve it with a smile on your face and your guests will be grateful.
One other funny story that you tell is about pimento cheese. Mm-hmm. Is pimento cheese just a Southern thing?
Okay, so it is, and I didn't realize it. You know, I guess because we're just so immersed in this culture where we are, and not to say that I don't ever visit or see or, you know, go anywhere above the Mason-Dixon line, you know, but they don't have a clue. They do not have a clue, the majority of them outside of our area, about what pimento cheese is. I did a radio show yesterday. It's a holiday radio show that we did for Sirius Radio, and I was talking about rice and gravy instead of having mashed potatoes, and the producer had never heard of that. She'd never heard of rice and gravy. It's things like that that blow my mind, but yes, absolutely. But once they have it once, and I am trying, every time I go to New York, I take pimento cheese, which is hysterical because it is a mess to try to get it through TSA. By the way, you cannot take pimento cheese on a plane. It has to be checked in your bag. I mean, either in your bag, you know, or in a cooler under the plane. And I have discussed this with them. I have been over it with them. But apparently, if you can pour it, you have to be able to put it in your hand. This is the rules for whether it's a liquid or a gel, okay? If you pour it in your hand and it goes through your fingers, then that constitutes a liquid or a gel. Well, I didn't want to pour it in my hand and wait to see if it was going to go through my fingers, so I went on and checked it. But anyway, so I do. I take it to New York every time I go. You know, I bring it to the Today Show, and I do feel like I'm the pimento cheese ambassador. And once they have it, honey, they can't handle it. But they've refused to call it pimento cheese. They call it that cheese dip, which drives me nuts. I know. And they call my cheese straws, they call those cheese crackers. And that aggravates me, too. Like, it's not a
cracker. It's a totally different thing.
It's not a cracker. It's a cheese straw. And they're like, well, it doesn't look like a straw. I said, well, I make mine differently because I do the thin, you know, long ones. But it's still called a cheese straw. They don't get it.
Well, now, what are the cheese ones called in this party cookbook? The ones that you make with Rice Krispies.
Cheese pennies.
Okay, because those are excellent.
Aren't those
We've
great?
Already tried those. Those are really good, too.
Oh, yeah. Were you at the Rice Krispies?
Yes.
Yeah. That's a recipe that I've had all my life, and it's always been my favorite. I mean, I love a traditional cheese straw, but if you don't have a lot of time, and these are great because you don't have to use a press. You know, you just roll them into a ball, and then you take a fork and hit them to do a crosshatch on top, or you can just flatten them down. They're absolutely wonderful. Simple, simple, simple. Great served with a Bloody Mary. Great on a bar. You know, just a little bit of an alternative to just putting up nuts.
And you were talking about one party that stuck with you, and that's Sundown on the Grounds.
Mm-hmm. In Mississippi, we're most proud of the McCarty family and the McCarty legacy and the McCarty pottery line. Lee and Pup McCarty, great friends with my grandmother, and just have always been great friends. And I have some of the funniest stories in the entire world about my grandparents and the McCartys. Anyway, one of the parties that they always had each year, and they were notorious for just the most divine, absolutely fabulous parties that anyone has ever held. But one of them was just called a sundowner. It was nothing more than everyone in the front yard visiting and talking and having a cocktail and then standing and waiting on the sun to go down. And once the sun went down, everybody would just stand for a few minutes in quiet silence. And then they would all go inside and then the real party would begin. But it was just a way to celebrate something that, you know, we see 365 days a year. And you don't take time to celebrate it, to really look at it and to notice it. I mean, maybe once every blue moon you may turn and kind of look at a sunset or think about it. But it's just a reminder to celebrate the everyday. Life is short, and you do. You need to take time to celebrate the mundane. Because honestly, our life is made up with so much more mundane than it actually is Christmas and New Year's and fireworks. You know what I'm saying? So you celebrate every day and the little things that happen every day. And I think that that really does determine whether or not your life is truly rich.
Well, I think that's the reason your Cheers, My Dears party was so touching. I only wish my mother were still here so that I could have a cheers, my dear. But talk about that a little bit, because that is really a great idea. And we do forget to celebrate the everyday.
I know. It can be very sad when you think about it, when you think about all the missed opportunities to celebrate, even a Wednesday night. And that actually kind of leads to the next book that I'm starting to work on right now. I can't really talk about it that much, but it's very much in line with that. My gosh, my friends and I, when we were in high school living in Memphis, we were not the best. I mean, I'm going to be honest, we were bad. We were not good. We were bad. And I mean, not that bad, but we certainly gave our parents fits. No more than my children are giving me right now, though I do have to say that I'm being paid back every day. And I think that's kind of when it occurred to me that, you know, our poor parents, my God. I mean, one time we snuck out, Sharon, it was a group of best friends, four of us. It was Jill, Mindy, Sharon, and me. Sharon had this boyfriend, and she had decided that she had to break up with them right then. And, of course, it was 1 o'clock in the morning when she had decided this, and we knew he was at a party. And this was before cell phones, so it wasn't like she could just text him. So, of course, we had to get in the car. Well, first we pushed the car down the driveway
so we wouldn't wake anybody up.
And then we get it into the cove, and then we drive off. Well, Mindy's mother woke up and realized that all four of us were gone. Oh, my God. I cannot imagine the fear. I mean, if my children had done this to me, oh, my God, I would have died. You know, and no cell phone, no way to find us, no way to get us. Anyway, we ended up, you know, had a big night, and then Sharon broke up with the boyfriend. Of course, we were enjoying ourselves at the party while she was, you know, breaking up. Then we get home, and there is Melinda Yarbrough standing at the door. She had gone through 3 bags of Hershey's Kisses while she'd been waiting. She was so stressed out. So at this point, she was sick as a dog, madder than hell, had been up all night waiting on us. Anyway, this party is a party to celebrate our poor mothers, or as I say in the book, what's left of our poor mothers, and to get together good friends and thank them and apologize, because now that we have children, we actually know the hell that we put them through. And I love the takeaway on this, which is just a silver framed picture of Mindy and Jill and Sharon and I in a picture frame, and then it's engraved, "We are so sorry," for each one of the parents. But it is. It's a fun party just to celebrate, you know, the women in our lives that helped raise us and make us into who we are today.
Well, I got to tell you, the takeaway for me is the crab hush puppies. You know, your book always comes out right before our annual beach trip.
Ah.
And we take it with three other couples. So we always get to experiment on them, and they've come to really appreciate that. And this year's takeaway was the crab cake hush puppies. That is the best recipe, and it's so simple.
Thank you.
Which is another thing, I have to say, that I love about this, because all the recipes, you don't have to have special ingredients that you're only going to use ever once for this one particular recipe. Why do you think we always try to complicate things when we throw a party?
I think it's part of our nature to want to do our very best, and we feel like we need to push ourselves and go over and above. But I'm just telling you, this is not the time to try out your new recipes. You need to go with tried and true. Honey, you pull out that little black dress recipe, which those are the ones that you use over and over again that you know are going to work, just like that little black dress that you've got in your closet. Because, like I say, I mean, you're having to make sure that beds are made up. You need to make sure that they're fresh guest towels. You need to make sure that you got scented candles all around the house. You've got a lot of other things. You need to make sure that you have, you know, little arrangements or at least a little flower in the bathroom. I mean, you want to be able to do all these details. But if you're slaving over some recipe that you've never made before, that's tedious, that is going to drive you to the brink of insanity, you know, you're not going to have time to do all these details. And that's when the stress is going to come in. And we want this to be stressless, or at least less stressful, I guess I should say.
I also had to take a cautionary tip from you. And that's not to start cleaning up as soon as the guests are at the end of their dessert.
God,
I'm so bad about that.
I'm no better. I am horrible. And that also comes from catering. Basically, I'm nothing but a glorified waitress, which is great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a waitress, and that is exactly what I am. I'm a waitress, I'm a garbage handler, and I'm a dishwasher. And I am damn good at it. But that truly, that's what I am. And so when the party is over, it is like a deep need within me to get those plates picked up, get them in the dishwasher, get them cleaned up, and be done. But if you do that, it signals the party's over and that you're restless and that you're ready for everybody to go home. If you are ready to go to bed, then fine, start clearing plates, you know, start cutting out lights. Look at your guest. One of my best friends in the world is hysterical, and at the end of the night, because I don't know, unfortunately, when I go to someone else's house, I don't know when to leave. I'm always the last one. Luke and I are always the last one to leave. If you're at a party at the end of the night and we're still there, you can assure yourself that you've outstayed your welcome. You know, I mean, the high schools do not know when to go home. And so I have this friend of mine, you know, he's funny and his wife loves to entertain, but he's not real big on it. He wants to be in the bed, you know, going to sleep at a certain time. And so he'll say, now look, Mary, it's time to go to bed so these fine people can go on home. And he'll say it to everybody, and then we all know it's time to leave. And I understand you're like me. It's not that you want the people to leave. It's just that you want it to all be cleaned up so now you can relax.
Exactly.
You know, but it's not saying that. And we're going to have to learn to relax and realize that those damn dishes will still be there tomorrow and that we can do it then. You know, I mean, it's hard. But that's the best part of the party is once it's kind of over and everybody's just sort of sitting around.
Exactly.
So even if they're sitting around with an empty plate in front of them, it's going to be okay. And you have to keep reminding yourself of that.
That's going to be hard for me, but I will try based on your expert suggestion. Well, if you had to pick one recipe from this book, is it one of your own or is it one of the original 1972 ones? That's hard.
It is, you know, and that's the question that I get asked the most, and it is hard because it's like they're all my children, you know? I mean, honestly, I'm trying to sit over here and reach for the book so I can kind of cheat as I thumb through it, but I do, and so much of this is what my mood is, you know, when I'm doing it. Oh, God. Like right now, it's lunchtime. I'm starving. I would love some of that curry chicken salad. That, to me, is one of my favorite things in the entire world. I have loved it all my life, you know, with some raisins and a coconut on top and and some crushed peanuts. But as far as an all-time favorite recipe in here, one that I really feel like has stood the test of time and is truly warranted, God, I say that, now I've got 15 that are coming to my head. I just don't know. I love all these recipes. I mean, I really do. It's so hard to decide. This Texas chocolate sheet cake with the poured icing, it's one of those icings that you cook and then you pour it. It has pecans in it, and it's kind of soaked down into that chocolate cake. That is probably my all-time favorite recipe. That's something that one of my dad's friends used to make, Elizabeth Lewis, one of our family's friends. I shouldn't say my dad's friend because she's certainly one of my friends too. But then here we go, the chewy brownie ice cream sandwiches. There ain't nothing wrong with that either. Anyway, so she used to make this recipe, make this cake, and just ever since I was little, it was my favorite cake. So are you asking me right now today, I'm going to say that that is, oh, I was going to say that, but then I remembered the banana pudding pie. And this
that
has a meringue.
Wonderful.
Oh my gosh. Just stop it with it. I mean, it's got a meringue topping. It's a pie and a pudding all together. I mean, that's, and then there we go. Here's one more. I mean, see, because I love cheese straws and I love tomato tartlets. So this is a cheese, it's a tomato tartlet with a cheese straw crust. Best of both worlds. I mean, that's the best hors d'oeuvre that anybody could ever come up with.
I'll have to remember that one for sure.
I mean, I know. I just want to get the Post-its out for you, and that's when I'm signing the book. People will ask me, and I'll start circling and writing down recipes, and an hour later, I hand them their book, and there's a line a mile long. You just honestly, you can't go wrong with any of these recipes. And I know that I wrote it, and I know that a lot of the recipes that I hope will become your favorites, and they will become lifelong recipes that, you know, that you'll make over and over again, and that people will ask you to make over and over again. They're all, I mean, these are rock star recipes, every last one of them.
Well, and they're by occasion, so if there's something that you really need help with, you can go to that occasion, from everything from a sip and see, which I think is pretty Southern, to impressing your husband's boss for dinner.
Exactly. And that's something that people need to do more. You know, we don't have the boss over very often at all, and it's important. I think it's one of the most important things to do. I'm telling you, you want to get ahead in life, you have your boss over.
And fix one of these recipes.
Hell yeah.
Or the Yoast Roast, because we really enjoyed that from the last
time. Now you could go back to, come on, I mean, what can I bring and pull some recipes out of that too? But yeah, absolutely.
Well, you've done a lot of TV appearances since last time I saw you.
I have.
Is the Today Show still your favorite?
Oh, of course.
Of course.
Yes.
But what
yes.
about your Food Network experience and
so,
Hallmark?
Yeah. So Today Show is always going to be my everything. And it goes so far beyond just being on the show. It's having a dream that, you know, that I had wanted for 17 years that came true. And so what that tells me in every other aspect of my life is that, you know, there's a time for everything and that God knows the exact perfect and right time for everything in your life if you trust. I get very impatient, and I think we all do. But I did. I waited 17 years on the Today Show. And so with things like the other dreams that come up every single day that aren't happening right when I want them, which is now.
Exactly.
You know, I have to go back and remember that had I been given the opportunity of the Today Show right when I first thought of it, I would have maybe been on once, and then that would have been it. I wasn't ready. No more ready than the man in the moon. And when it was time, I was more ready than I could have possibly been. And so obviously, you know, with the other dreams that are coming along or things that I have that I'm focusing on now, you know, I'm not ready. And I do know that it will come at the exact right time. And so that's why the Today Show obviously is so fun, ridiculously fun. And the hosts are so loving and kind and gracious and welcoming and warm to me. But it has been fun to do some Food Network things. The kitchen is a lot of fun. Judging Chopped was one of the wildest things I've ever done in my life. I love going out to Hallmark Home and Family. LA is just like nothing you've ever seen before. And the Hallmark Home and Family is actually on one of the Warner Brothers lots, which means that to get to the Hallmark Home and Family house, you pass by Bonanza, and then you pass by, you know, the all of these sets, Little House on the Prairie, and then it's the Christmas. Oh, come on, the Grinch. The Grinch that stole Whoville. You go right past Whoville. I mean, like, it's like all of these insane things. And then there's the Hallmark Home and Family Home. The Good Place is right next door to that new show. So you're looking at the Good Place set, and then there's Hallmark Home and Family, and then next to that is the old Little House on the Prairie, and the next, and it's just insane. So that's a ton of fun to go to. And the host, again, and hostesses, they're all just lovely. Really, really lovely people.
Well, you kind of hinted that maybe there's another cookbook that I can impress my friends with at the beach next year.
Well, I don't know if it'll be next year, but we are always thinking, and I really do love, 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 love this concept that I've been working on with my editor, Catherine Cobbs, who did What Can I Bring? And then she also did this book with me. And it's something that we've kind of been working on and playing with. And I think now it's kind of all formed and fashioned. It's good. It's really good.
Well, good. That'll give me something to look forward to, as well as, you know, continuing to make these great recipes.
Good, 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 good.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, my Lord. It is such a pleasure to come and sit with you all. You have no idea how much I appreciate it. And last time we did this show, I cannot tell you how many people called me and texted me and said, oh, I just heard you on the radio. So it's an honor and a pleasure to be here with you always.
Well, we'll look forward to next time.
I hope so.
We've reached the end of our time for today's book talk. I've been talking with Elizabeth Highschool, the author of The Southern Living Party Cookbook, A Modern Guide to Gathering. The book is divided by occasion and offers a fresh lineup of party ideas, along with tips for hosting the perfect party. The book is published by Oxmoor House. I'm Linda Lloyd, and this is Book Talk.
Thank you for joining us today. Book Talk is recorded in the studios of WIPL in Memphis, Tennessee. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at WIPLFM@gmail.com or write to us at Book Talk, care of WIPL, 3030 Poplar Avenue, Memphis, Tennessee, 38111, or call us at 901-415-2752.
This recording of Book Talk is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license for the United States. You are free to share, copy, distribute, or display and perform this work. But there are restrictions. Nothing in this license impairs or restricts WYPL's moral rights. Thank you for listening to Book Talk.